It's still available on Wattpad if you're brave enough to find it.
What's up, Yap Squad, and welcome to another episode of the Yap Sesh podcast. My name is Brooke, and I am here with my co-host, Sawyer, and we are a fangirl podcast where we discuss all things fandom and nerdy and hope to share the experiences of women and queer fans everywhere. You can follow us both on Spotify and our YouTube channel. Make sure to subscribe and follow so you never miss an episode. And we've got a good one for y'all today, let me tell you. But some housekeeping.
Oh, yes. Of course. This episode's dropping a week after the first ever Star Wars Spelling Bee, which we hosted alongside our friend Jordan from Wikipedia. And we just want to say a big thank you to everyone who participated in the Spelling Bee or donated for Point of Pride. We were able to exceed our $2,500 goal into over $3,000 for this wonderful organization. And it was such an exciting event, and I can't wait to do it again next year.
Yeah, it was really fun. I think we didn't really know what to expect out of it because we've never really had seen like a Star Wars spelling bee, and I think everyone had a good time. I thought it was really fun. We had some really awesome guests that were able to participate with us, and so we hope to grow the event even bigger for next Pride Month. But until then, let's get into our episode today. So we had an excellent conversation. Our guest today is Maggie Lovett, who is an awesome online personality and journalist and creative. And she is also a big fangirl. So we're really glad to have had her on. We talked all about, drumroll, shipping, which couldn't have come at a better time, which is funny because we actually recorded this episode probably about a month ago, and just the way that our schedule worked out, we couldn't release it until now, so we're recording this intro after the fact, and it couldn't have come at a better time because, Sawyer, what do we have now?
We have a new ship.
We have a new ship. If you are new here, we are big Star Wars girlies in this house. We've had lots of episodes talking all about different aspects of the Star Wars fandom. And we've been watching The Acolyte. If you haven't caught up on our Acolyte recaps, they are available now. We just recorded with a good pal, Candace, from the Geeky Waffle about episodes 5 and 6, which just came out on Monday. So if you haven't gone back to check that out, make sure you do, because we have been loving it. And we are loving the, what is it? Oshamir.
Yeah.
Oshamir. Yeah. Osha and Chimer. If that means nothing to you, please go watch The Acolyte. I promise that we're not getting paid by Lucasfilm or Disney to say this. I just really like the show. it's brought back a lot of
feelings.
Memories and feelings and emotions about previous enemies to lovers ships, and a lot of discourse that comes with that. So I think that this episode of us discussing shipping comes at a perfect time. So we hope that you enjoy it. And I think let's get right into it. Well, hello, everyone. And we have an awesome guest today. Maggie, would you introduce yourself and a little bit about who you are, what you do?
Yes. So my name is Maggie. I am an entertainment journalist, which still constantly geeks me out to say, a lifelong fangirl who managed to climb up the ranks during the pandemic. And now I'm over at Collider doing all sorts of cool stuff, interviewing people, writing reviews, and leading the entire news team. My origins are very different from that field. I actually kind of got my background in museums and history. So I come from more of like a historical anthropological background, which is one of the reasons why I like fandom so much, because fandom is a culture. And that was a big part of my research in my master's program.
That's awesome.
So my hyperfixation.
Yeah, I love it. So you're like a professional fangirl.
I am. I somehow managed to like claw my way out of the trenches of Tumblr and managed to get to pay off a lot of the things that I dreamed of doing when I was like 18, 19, and 20. So
always starts with Tumblr, doesn't it?
Always. Either Live Journal, the comment section of fanfic.net, all those fun things.
And here we are. So we're fangirls in this house. So we like to ask our guests, do you have a first fandom that you remember? And do you have a favorite fandom?
So I think my first fandom is technically Star Trek, because I went to my very first convention when I was 3 years old. My mom took me for my birthday, and I met Robert Beltran at Chakotay at the time. I was just like starstruck little three-year-old for my birthday. It was a great experience. But that was my first like introduction to what fandom actually is, because we went to a lot of like the events at the Star Trek convention, and like I danced with like a six-year-old kid that he was dressed up like a Ferengi and like full prosthetics, and like everybody was so cool. It was very like 1990s fandom experience for the very first time, and I think that was like what really cemented me as somebody who liked the nerdy stuff, that liked the like the pretend of fandom and like the community of fandom. My first, I guess, like online fandom was probably Lord of the Rings. I was online way too young. I was like 6 years old, scrolling through like the Yahoo chat boards and AOL chat boards, giving my unfiltered opinions at six. I think I was like pretending I was like 10 or 11, as one does in the 90s and early 2000s. So that was probably my first like online fandom. And from there, it was like, it didn't stop. I just constantly found myself in my next fandom obsession.
Were you an early adopter of like online roleplay?
Oh yeah, I was on Neopets. I think I did a lot of like wolf roleplay. Like, I think we had something called like the Blue Moon Wolf Pack on Neopets, and I have no idea who any of those other people were. I don't know if they were kids. I don't know if they were like 30-year-old men. But I was just like, and they were all howling at the moon. I was like all of 8 years old on Neopets, just like writing my little stories up. But yeah, I think that was my first experience with the role play, was on Neopets.
Amazing. Yeah, because Sawyer, you did a lot. Roleplay.
Oh, I still do it.
I mean, don't we all?
You know, I don't do it as much as it anymore, and like I definitely feel like as my adult experiences have grown, my interest in that has changed. We'll talk about that more later, but no, I still do it. You know, I'm not ashamed to admit that. And it's always been, now that I have like my autism diagnosis, I understand more why I was so like, that was a comfort for me when I was a teenager, because I didn't have a lot of friends, and like I like to dive into those worlds and play my favorite characters, and like that. Yeah, I think that has a huge part to deal with it. But, you know,
I mean, I was homeschooled, so I was like very isolated. So getting to like become somebody else and like write out stuff. And like, if you like writing, it's like such a fun exercise, and like playing with different voices and like exploring different dynamics that you might not otherwise like find yourself writing. It's like such a great tool, really.
Yeah. I recommend it. The only thing is about it made me, for whatever reason, like when I got really, really into role play, I could no longer write fan fiction. I wrote fan fiction a lot. And then I was like, I was so used to like writing a story with multiple people. And this is not, ladies and gentlemen and non-binary folks, this is not just ERP, okay? I'm talking like full narratives, stories,
multiple characters, introducing other characters into it. Yeah,
OCs that try to steal Ben Solo away from Rey.
I need to know, like, for your experience in roleplay, did you start on like Tumblr, or was it even before that on like the Pro Board, the GeoCities, where you would go to like the websites where you would list like, I'm starting a website next week for this specific fandom, we're all gonna roleplay this, and you would join like a group of roleplayers, and then you would like create a character, they would have to approve you, or you could like submit for like a actual character from the fandom already, and like you would have to send like writing samples and they would approve. That was my first experience, like having to be like, I promise you I can write like Guy of Gisborne from Promenade 2006.
Okay, the So I actually had a weird start. I've done that. I have like done that, but my start was on Instagram in the very, very early days of Instagram, where Instagram was brand new. Mm-hmm. And I was like seeing these Disney accounts pop up. And I
Isn't
was
that, like, where the birthplace of Jack and Elsa was, the Jelsa shipper started on Instagram.
Yes. So my first role playing fandom was Frozen, and I roped my best friend into it, and then but then that transitioned very strongly into like Omegle, and I don't know if y'all had this, but when Omegle died a couple months ago, the like a hush fell over the proverbial crowd, especially the Raylos, because the Raylos were still using Omegle every single day. And so there was like people on Twitter like scrambling to try to get all the Omegle girlies into a Raylo RP server, and it was like on Discord. But yeah, so it was Instagram, and then it was mostly Omegle, and then I tried Tumblr, but my only experience with Tumblr roleplay is that the only weird, I did Ace Attorney roleplay on Tumblr.
Oh my god.
And I just remember that there was this lady, and she was like 37, and she had like 9 cats, and she would just go out of character all the time to tell me her like sad life story, and I was like 15, and I was lying about my age, because
we all did that.
I was like, I have to stop role playing when I'm an adult. I have to. And here I am still doing it. But whatever, who cares? It's fine.
I mean, what is Dungeons and Dragons?
If
RPing so you can flirt with your friends. Like, it's the same thing, you know?
It's the exact same thing.
We're all cringe in our own way.
I have to say, the people who have roleplayed on Tumblr are stronger than the army, because I have never experienced so much toxicity than from Tumblr RP groups. It's like, absolutely the things that did to my mental health when I was in college. An experience.
Tumblr's a crazy place. It's either like a really good place for fandom or a really terrible place. And I feel like there's no in between. That's absolutely. Like, I didn't use Tumblr. I used Tumblr, you know, back in like 2012, 2013. And then stopped. I talked about this in another episode. And then after The Last Jedi came out, I went back on Tumblr, because that's where all the good Raylo shit was. And then I stopped going on Tumblr. And then I came back after The Rise of Skywalker. And then I stopped again. And now I've been using it a lot more, because I like actually finding a lot of my fanfic on Tumblr. I like it more, I think, than AO3 or any of the other sites. I think AO3 has a better search system.
Oh, yeah.
But I love being able to just, like, search by a particular, like, hashtag, and then I'll see not only fanfics, but also, like, other posts, too. So, like, I'm, like, in the trenches with Baldur's Gate 3 fanfic. And I'm about to be in the trenches with Arthur Morgan fanfic, because I just
started playing Red Dead. You're going down the same route I went down. You will have to use AO3 for Arthur Morgan, though. That's where like, all the good stuff is. The good Dragon Age is on AO3.
Oh, good to know. Good to know. Yeah.
Especially if you're a Cullen girly.
Yeah, well, I think... I also want to ask, before we get into our main topic of the day, I would love to know how... Because we've had a lot of really cool creatives and creators and like people that have now moved into a professional setting in the entertainment fandom culture. So how has your experience with fandom changed now that you have become a professional?
I think that I benefit a lot from the fact that I understand fundamentally how fandom works, and specifically shipping. And I understand how you can use that to get the information that you know fans are looking for. So that's something I've really prided myself on, like as a journalist, like trying to cater to the fans, because at the end of the day, y'all are the ones reading our stuff. We should be trying to like come to you with the information that like we know that you want. And so that's something like I personally really prided myself on. But the biggest thing for me is that I have had to really like keep my fandom in check in a way that I haven't previously had to. Because I have like a 99% chance of working with these people, interviewing these people, or even in some cases, like becoming friends with these people that I am hyper fixating on. And it is an absolute struggle. I like, it is an everyday struggle that I'm like, I can't tweet this insanely horny thing about this character because their actor follows me.
Yeah.
And it kills me a little bit. It does. I have like adopted pseudonyms that I have used to like be in fan spaces where I could be a little bit more unfiltered, but somehow people always still figure out it's me. Luckily, most people are really good secret keepers, but it does terrify me. So I'm just like, I want to still be a fan. I want to still be the person that I've been for like 30 years. It's hard. So it's definitely changed. But I think I also benefit from the fact that like I had already started kind of transitioning out of fandom at like 2018 because I started working in film and television and I worked with some of my favorite ships on movies. And I've worked on like different projects with actors that like have featured in fan fiction that I've read, and it started to kind of change my brain then. And then once kind of things kicked off for me in the journalism realm in 2020, then everything just kind of got rewritten. It's been an experience, but I also think that like having that fandom experience helps me to do better interviews, to have better conversations, like when I'm doing moderation and things like that. And also knowing, this is something that I think has been like a conversation here recently with like fans asking really inappropriate questions during panels. And I think the fact that like I am a fan myself and I know what is going on 9 times out of 10 within the fandoms of the people that I am like moderating for, that I think I would clock what's about to happen and steer it away from that before it happens, because you can always tell. Because if you've been in fandom long enough, you know like how somebody's going to start asking a question and you can go, oh nope, we're gonna just move along.
Yes, I have been thinking about this a lot because I just went to Fan Expo in Philly, and I went to the Neil Newbon panel, and as soon as they were like, okay, we're going to take some fan questions, line up people at the mics, I was like, I know that a question in, I'm going to have to leave, because I get secondhand cringe, embarrassment so bad, because I don't know, I just feel like if you're going to do it, have the questions like vetted beforehand, or like have a strong moderator, like you said, that can steer the conversation away from that, or just like nick it in the bud immediately, because it's tough. And I feel bad for those like actors that have to to deal with it. And they're also like, a lot of the actors, of course, they're very passionate about the roles that they play and what they're in, but they're not in the same fandom spaces that we are. So they'll get asked.
Yeah. I never want actors to know what's going on in fandom. That is like don't make them aware.
Right.
Like, don't let them become conscious baby. They don't need to know.
they don't need to know anything. So like whenever someone asks a question that is very much like a online fandom thing, and they're just like, what? It's just like, stop. Like, let the fans have their own thing, and then let the actors live their own lives. And we don't need to overlap. Like the whole like Pedro Pascal, like daddy thing that just went way overboard.
Like, it was funny the first time, and I like the way that it was framed, like, in that original interview, but then it just got done to death. And we're seeing the same thing happen with the House of the Dragon cast. The Negroni thing has, like, they look physically pained that is still being brought up 2 years later. Has it been 2 years?
I think so.
Or two, yeah.
I'm like, let it go. Stop being chronically online. It's
and no I feel like a lot of, it's interesting how things are. And you might have an interesting perspective on this, being a journalist, how like the fans will have something or like a joke or a meme. But then I feel like as soon as the media outlets or journalists take it and use it, like actually face to face with the actors, it's like, that's when it's like too much, I think.
Yeah. Once it leaves containment, it's no longer fun. Like,
Yeah.
And I think it's the BuzzFeedification of things. This isn't like a new phenomenon. I know I've seen a lot of people being like, oh, this is like a new thing that's been happening a lot. And I'm like, well, technically it kind of started in like 2014, 2015. Mm-hmm. It's just that more people are online now and more people are in fandom in different ways than they were in like 2014, 2015. I think most people look back at that time and they think of fandom as being like, I took this like Twee, Disney, which princess am I? And I got like the goth Little Mermaid or whatever. And now you have people who, because of the pandemic, weren't as exposed to fan fiction. They weren't as exposed to even watching things. There's so many people that got invested in shows that they otherwise like didn't have time for. And those people were not like us. They were not raised online in this fandom. So there's a lot of like blurred lines now in ways that we have never seen before. It makes me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, but I will say that, you know, you brought up that your unique perspective has allowed you to be consciously aware of that while you're in your professional space. And I feel that, you know, when you said that, I immediately thought of a few interviews that you've advertised on Twitter and said like, hey, like Raylos, you're gonna want to like check out this interview. And I think that there definitely is a way to integrate
the culture
with the actual like fandom happening, and I think you do that really beautifully. So hopefully people can learn from that, because they definitely think, especially with the panels, there was another one this weekend and I saw. And I wasn't able to like, you know, I didn't actually see the video. I don't know if there was a video, but I heard it was not good. And I heard that the person was very, very, very young.
9 years old, asking about sex scenes.
Okay. Great. I mean, the pandemic has to have played a huge role in that. Oh, right?
Absolutely.
Because it's also, we're seeing like on the education side of things, teachers are like, there is something up with the Gen Alphas, and
they're terrifying.
Like lack of like they don't have any. Not to say that the internet safety that we got growing up was great, but at least there was some level of awareness.
Yeah, and it's so interesting too, because like I keep thinking about the fact that like so many people are like, oh, parents are just letting their kids watch whatever, and I'm like, well, that's not true, because I watched Buffy like when it premiered and I was like 4. I watched like Beetlejuice when I was like 4. Like I watched a lot of things when I was young, but I think that my parents like were really good at being like, this is fiction, this is like, this is just a thing that you can be entertained by, in a way that kids today who are not being monitored don't seem to have that like parental guidance, like keeping them rooted in reality. And that's the thing that scares me, because it's like you can let kids watch things early and like judge things based off of like how mature your kid is or how their like understanding of things is. And that's not like obviously going to be the same for everybody, but I just feel like there's this new generation that it's just going to go wild when they get more online than they already are. And they also want to control everything, which is another thing that I have not been able to deal with in my old age.
But sitting here talking about it, I'm thinking like, you know, back to my role play days when I was way too young to be role-playing what I was role playing. And there were, I remember a couple of very distinct moments where, you know, I was acting older than my own age, but I was also very honest about with the right people. You know, if I developed some kind of partnership with a role player, I would say what my actual age was. And there were a couple times where they would say, okay, you've told me this information, we're done. I cannot talk to you anymore, which is the right answer. But that version of me without those interactions definitely would have gone on a stage and asked a really inappropriate question.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, I guess ultimately, are we failing as the generation that should be protecting them? Is the generation under us? Is it Gen Z that's failing Gen Alpha? Like who's at fault here? Because I feel like I benefited from a lot of like Gen Xers like guiding me through things, like my first introduction to like concepts of like Dungeons and Dragons and like reading books connected to my favorite fandoms and stuff all came from the Gen Xers, who then, you know, were raised by older boomers that were much more hands-off. So was that then like a reaction? It starts again, like anthropology, my brain's constantly trying to like look through the functionality of like how these things are falling apart. And it scares me ultimately at the end of the day. I mean, I fear what fandom will look like. I would say not even in 10 years, but like within the next year and a half, 2 years, like as Gen Alpha does start to grow up and hit like the 10, 11, 12, 13, where they are online more and they are pretending they're older. It's scary.
Yeah. Even something as simple as like how much spoiler culture has changed over. I think about, you know, such a big thing in the Game of Thrones fandom was going on Twitter and live tweeting as the episodes aired. And now you go on, and even if a show is coming out at, you know, a reasonable time for most people in the world to watch it, if you're live tweeting it, there are people in your comments being like, bro, the episode just dropped. Why are you spoiling it? And I'm just like, you would not survive like the Game of Thrones era. And it's so fascinating to me. I don't know if it's, you know, the pandemic, if it's the like, because when Disney Plus, for example, started, every episode dropped at 3 a.m., which of course, for East Coast people, like that's so late. Not many people can stay up that late to watch it. And so I understand that. I always say that there's like a hierarchy of spoilers and when you should post online, just kind of like a golden rule. That's not like a law, obviously, but yeah, like certain things you can spoil as soon as, you know, they drop, like a live tweeting a TV show, movies where you have to go to a theater to pay money to see the movie, you know, wait a little bit longer, or things like books and video games that take longer to get through, or, you know, different accessibilities, like obviously take longer, but it's just like, yeah, the conversation around it is so, people are so like high strung about it's not so being weird. Spoiled online.
I also like always think about like some of my earliest interactions on Twitter was with the Once Upon a Time fandom, and like the cast would come on, don't judge me, the cast would come on Sunday nights at 8 o'clock, and they would live tweet the episodes with people and like retweet people's like reactions, the writers, the creatives. And this was all, of course, before the Once Upon a Time fandom ran everybody off social media. Which I do often joke that Once Upon a Time was the downfall of modern fandom, because I was so invested. I was a big name fan in that fandom. I was so invested in that fandom that I look back at that so often. And I'm like, this is the downfall of everything, because like the divisiveness of the shipping, how real world sometimes the shipping got, the way that it was way too exposed to the actors. And like some of the people did not know how to ask interview questions that were not like weirdly gross. And then like, there's just like so much stuff from that one that I think spilled over into the fandoms we see today. So I do often cite that one in combination with like everything that was going on, like adjacent to that with like Super Hulock, mm-hmm, for like shaping us into this very weird fandom scape today. It's so weird.
It's the shift, I think, from like network television to streaming, especially has like
streaming everything wants everything is so secretive. And I'm like, guys, yeah, it's not that exciting.
I just think about how they had a live stream from the set of Revenge of the Sith that you could go online and watch.
I remember it vividly.
And now it's like the script has to be like locked up with like a key in a briefcase in a safe, and like, you know, you've got people like Kevin Feige with a gun to your head, like, don't spoil this. And it's
well,
so
I think the MCU
funny.
Is to blame for that a little bit, don't you think? Because like they once the MCU exited phase one and it became, you know, this whole interconnected universe, I feel like that's when they really started to get uptight
yeah.
about it.
And I mean, everybody it's been there. Really... It's been there in doses, right? Like we hear about, you know, how secretive they were in during Empire Strikes Back with the whole like Luke reveal. But like yeah. it's definitely gone to another level in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
For sure.
Sadly.
Well, I think it's time. We could talk about, you know, all fandom stuff all day, but let's get into the real topic of the day. We always have our guests bring a topic to us. We kind of coerced Maggie into this topic.
Just a little.
Twist your arm. But today we're going to be talking about shipping and shipping culture. So is this the episode?
Action figures.
Yay!
Great. All my Raylo stuff is like amazing. In Illinois still, but I do have the Zoom Zooms. So
is this the episode that Yapsesh gets canceled? Maybe.
Yes.
I'm half Rhaenyra. I don't have.
I already
Damon.
Told you.
I can't find Damon anywhere.
I already told you. I'm
crying about it.
Yeah, take it up with God, y'all. Take it up. That's like my favorite line when, especially when the first season was airing, like the chokehold that like short hair Damon and young Rhaenyra have on me still to this day.
I just want to say, I have a problem with white haired men. It is terminal.
Amazing.
Well, no, but I mean, we also, I think you name dropped Silky the first Yapsesh episode. And that is one that I have just elected to not bring up. on the internet, and Brooke's just like, well, Silky, take it up with God. And I'm like, okay, we're
taking it up with God. Take it up with God. That's what I say. That's what I say. But we'll get into that. We'll get into our problematic ships. There's a lot to cover with our shipping. So I wanted to ask first, what was everyone's like introduction into like the shipping world? And do you remember your first ever ship?
I mean,
could be anything.
I know my very first ship was Tommy and Kimberly on the Power Rangers because I cared so deeply about them getting together. And I think that's like the first one that I can actively remember.
I know there's like weird Power Rangers lore about what which couples have kissed and aren't allowed to. Did they get a kiss?
They did get a kiss, I believe.
Nice.
I'm trying to remember what is actually canon and what is things I've read as a child on fanfiction.
Isn't that bad when you read so much fanfic? You're like, wait, I have to organize.
Especially when you're really young and you're like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. Wait a second.
What about you? Yeah. What's your first ship?
It was probably like Elizabeth Swann and Will Turner.
Solid. That,
you know, every bisexual girlie's intro.
It's either that or the Mummy. Yeah.
Yes. It's one of the two.
My first ship that I can remember like actively shipping was like, I did have like a Jack Frost Elsa moment, but really for whatever reason, what I got into was Flynn Rider and Elsa.
You're like a crack ship girly.
I was at the time. I had my two like crazy crack ships of my life have been that and Hux and Rey for some reason, because there was this one fan fiction on AO3 that was so hot that I was like, I can deal with Fan and Hux. Like, Canon Hux, that is a gay man. But Fan and Hux...
A deeply repressed gay man, yes.
But yeah, it was Thelsa. And I wrote this fan fiction with Hannah, my best friend, called Frozen in Oz, where we were like, okay, what if Anna went to Oz because she has braids and she's actually Dorothy? And it was like we were having like a Frozen and Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West crossover moment. And yeah, it's a weird read. It's still available on Wattpad if you're brave enough to find it.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
I think one of my other earlier ships was maybe like Simba and Nala, because I watched The Lion King like when I was little. I destroyed my VHS. I watched it so many times.
I remember Kovu and Kairi. That,
yes.
It's like enemies to lovers. Then
yes. I love The Lion King too.
Love that movie so much.
Oh,
and,
so good.
And I feel like that's perfect segue for me to say, like, I think my biggest ship when I was a child that like had the largest impact on my shipping tastes going forward, because like, let's be real, Tommy and Kimberly, that's so vanilla. I really, really ship Spike and Buffy. Like, ooh. I love Spuffy. I was a Spuffy shipper at like 8 years old. Like, I love that ship so much. I mean, obviously I liked like Angel. I actually have a whole bunch of Angel figures down here. I loved Angel, but Spike and Buffy were my OTP. And that then colored every other ship from there on out for me. I was an ETL girl for the rest of my life.
I have heard that you're not the first person to tell me that that was their gateway to Raylo.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And I've watched select, like I have had curated episodes shown to me of Buffy, yeah, specifically Worth Buffy. So I get it. Yeah.
And it's so funny too, because I like, there was people I used to know. There's a really fantastic content creator who used to make YouTube videos. I think she's still making them occasionally, called Seduff, Seduff. And she was like one of the first Spuffy people I had like a long-term friendship with on social media in like 2005, 2006, early YouTube. And then I lost touch with her for a while. And then I found her again on Tumblr through Captain Swan, which was the ETL ship on Once Upon a Time. And then I lost touch with her after I left that fandom. And then I found her again on social media with Raylo. So it's like, we just move around. I know there's people on social media that always joke about like, oh no, the Raylos are coming, because we do kind of move like a swarm of locusts onto every new ETL ship. But I would argue that most of us are Spuffy shippers that are still looking for the spice of that dynamic in every new ship. So it predates Raylo, but I think we're all just like a little bit of like a hodgepodge of those ships together.
That's amazing. Speaking of ETL, yes. I wanted to ask, because there is one specific ETL, I don't even know if you would consider it ETL, but at least in like the beginning, it's more like lovers to friends. Anyway, the Darkling and, oh my God, what's her name?
Alina.
That is one that I actually like can like don't get behind.
Yeah.
For some reason, there's something about it that I'm like, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I like it in principle. I like it in fan fiction. I don't like how Netflix handled it. I also don't particularly like the books, but I do Jesse and I do like Ben, so I like their faces together. So yes. Like visually it works for me, and like there's stuff there that like I really enjoyed the first season, hated the second season, was not sad that it got canceled. But I like the dynamics and I liked what it could have been. But that was a case, I feel like, of an author who was afraid of making a character that people would love to hate and playing with like the actual dynamics that ETL could be.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating too, because the history of that is weird, because Lee used to ship it, like when she was on like social media on Tumblr and stuff, she like very clearly, I don't want to say it was like her end game, but she definitely had bigger plans for that dynamic in the books.
Yeah.
Until the Puritans of fandom got a hold of her and made her be like, you must fundamentally agree with your villain if you're writing him. If he's a bad person, you must condemn all of his actions in the fictional world, because you know that has real world connotations. And I'm like, it's fiction, guys. It's fiction. Let the hot villain get the hot heroine. It's okay. I promise you.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense, because there like are a lot of aspects of it that I feel like I would like. Like you have your Raylo-esque like force FaceTime kind of thing. And you like I would be all over that shit.
Yeah, and they're like they're hurting each other, and there's like they still want like to see the good in each other. Like that's the stuff I love. And then you always have like the lame best friend who's in love with her. And then somehow she always ends up with him, because it's just like, well, I guess.
Yeah. Like there's something,
I can't have a villain.
There's just something narratively that like doesn't click with me, and maybe that's why, because she was like kind of bullied out of really going for it. So
okay, yeah, which is so sad, because there was so much potential there. But
yeah, totally fair. So we are enemies to lovers, girlies in this house. But I wanted to talk about maybe some of the other like tropes that you all enjoy.
Oh,
with shipping, like what types of ships that you like.
Oh my gosh. So I am also a big sucker for like workplace romances. Mm-hmm. I am definitely, a cab, but cop procedurals are my jam. I love them so much. I was raised on like NCIS. I was raised on CSI. Like Grissom and Sarah was one of my really early ships. And I think that was one that I didn't even realize I was like shipping. That was on Crime Scene Investigation. Mm-hmm. And it was such a weird ship too, like in retrospect, for me to have like glommed onto. But I still occasionally, like, just to feel something, I'll go find like a super cut of like all of their scenes of like getting together. And it's like the tiny little like box thing from somebody like recording it off their VHS to upload it onto YouTube, just to feel something from that ship. And then that migrated when I started watching NCIS, and I shipped Tony and Ziva, and now I'm getting a spinoff series about Tony and Ziva. Again, like the fact that my ships can persevere for like 20 years, insane.
Yeah.
But then Bones and Booth, one of my like all time favorite shows. That TV show is the reason I got into anthropology. And then like, there's just so many other ones. There were some really good ones on like the spinoff shows for the NCISs. Law and Order, obviously, everybody wants them together. Like, yes. I love, there's something about that, especially with like the higher stakes. Like, as much as I love sitcoms like Parks and Rec or The Office, and like they're fun ships, there's no stakes. None of those characters could get killed in a shootout. None of those characters are going to have to fake kiss on a stakeout. Like, there's so much stuff with like the procedural shows that those dynamics and those tropes are catnip to me. Like, I want them so badly. So that's definitely like my other form of shipping outside of ETL that like I always gravitate towards. Especially I find a lot of like rom-com books that are like that as well. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely into that vibe.
Yes. I've read all of Allie Hazelwood's
Yes, books. That's the same Yes.
I love that vibe.
And that has stakes too, because it's academic peril.
Yeah.
Like, you lose everything. And like, it's the same kind of thing that I love.
Yes. Big fans. Sawyer, what about you?
I don't know about this one, guys, but I don't have to put anything in here that I don't want to share.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I am very, very much like, and I think this is like, again, the draw partially is like, I have such a lovely, wonderful, healthy, real relationship that is not anything like the nonsense that I consume fictionally. So I think for that reason, it's like when I do participate in shipping culture, I just, if it's not enemies to lovers, it has to be some kind of like forbidden romance.
I love a good toxic romance.
You know, whether toxic it's like
dependency, like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, well, just like 12 and Clara, you know, it was like something about like the Silver Fox. I was in love with Peter Capaldi when I was 15, and everyone
and
in
you're
my
not
life...
still look at him.
Oh my god, that makes me feel so old because he became a doctor when I was in college. I just need you to know that, like,
yeah, wait, same, I think, right? Because it was like what, 2014 ish time period, yeah.
Yeah.
I graduated college in 2015, so that just felt time passing in my soul.
Yeah. But you know, so and then there's some other ones that I, you know,
I love a good age gap romance, so I'm not gonna judge you.
You know, if they're not supposed to be together for any reason, I probably ship them.
That's, you know, that's so fair. Honestly, I was just, I was just thinking about how, like, the trope I love so much is, like, grumpy sunshine.
Yes.
I love when, like, sunshine can turn grumpy and to be like, I love this sunshine
especially
little flower.
When he's only happy for her. Like,
yes.
Like, the sunshine only shines when she's there. Yes.
So, okay. So, speaking of that and, like, couples that shouldn't be couples, when I watched The Walking Dead the first time, I was like, I know if I let myself, I will go down this like Daryl and Beth rabbit hole.
I knew you were saying Bethel.
Bethel rabbit hole. And I know, like, I was like, I am not engaging with this publicly online because the age gap is quite, like, at least canonically in the show, Beth is only like 18 and Daryl is 40 something. That's what I'm saying, you know? I really love that dynamic, how like the sunshine character can bring out the best qualities in the grumpy character that they like wouldn't have if they didn't have that sunshine character. I love that. So even if it doesn't necessarily have to be romantic, but like, I just love
it's nice
that.
When it is.
But it is nice when it is. Yeah. I love that dynamic so much.
Yeah.
So much.
I mean, we all can thank House of the Dragon for at least making some dynamics slightly more palatable to general audiences.
Real.
It's so funny to see people that I know that are, like, kind of morally pure about their fandom being like, I see your likes. I see what you're liking with House of the Dragon.
Well, it's so funny how, like, much it's changed from, like, when Game of Thrones was coming out. It was, like, Cersei, Jaime, like, disgusting. Dany and Jon, disgusting. And then we get House of the Dragon, it's like, oh.
They're like, oh, maybe this is hot.
Well, maybe this is okay. Yeah, they're both Targaryens. It's fine. Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about canon versus non-canon ships, and also crack ships, because listeners, if you don't know what a crack ship is, it's basically whenever you ship two characters either from the same story fandom or could be different fandoms that have never interacted, and you ship them. And like, how y'all feel about canon ships versus non-canon ships? What do you gravitate towards?
I'll go first. I think I gravitate towards canon ships, and I have been very hashtag blessed that even at the early stages of things, I have always picked the ship that ends up being canon. Sometimes the characters, half of the ship dies at the end, but you know what? It was still canon when the deaths occurred. It's happened more times than I care to admit to. I have never necessarily had a crack ship. I think that I got into shipping at a point where crack ships were not really a thing. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that I wasn't part of like role-playing communities where we were all playing like human versions of like Disney characters, and like the human version of an Aristocat was like dating Kovu or something like that, which I guess would like justify itself as a crack ship. But also at that point, if you're playing like human versions of animal characters and in a completely different setting and plot, at that point, they're no longer those characters. So I don't know if I've classified them as a crack ship. I will say I used to be really, really, really negative about ships that weren't canon, or ships that were like deemed as the rivals, as like the ships that like everybody wanted, but it wasn't going to happen. I'm not going to name names. Once Upon a Time fandom was notorious for this. And as a Captain Swan shipper, I dealt with a lot, because everybody wanted to ship ML with somebody. And so I think I used to have a really toxic mindset about ships that were deemed as like rivals to my soon to be canon ship. And now I'm a lot less negative. I will say there's been like some recent stuff that has like happened to me, like personally with people, that has made me very negative towards certain ships that I used to like, which is killing me. But for the most part, I now am of the mindset of like, they have more than one hand, unless it's Hook, and then he has a hook and a hand, but still, like, everybody, for the most part, they got two hands. We can make this a nice little poly love triangle. I feel like we should introduce more love triangles into things. It would solve like all the world's problems. And I was not that way when I was like 18 to, I would say embarrassingly, I wasn't that way until I was like 25, 26. In fandom, which is a really long time to be in fandom and doing shipping things and having like these really nasty feelings towards people. So yeah, I've always kind of stuck with like my canon ship, or the ship that like I felt was going to be canon, and then it usually was because I can read the narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is hard to like, when you are, because I think I also kind of gravitate more towards the canon ships.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, I feel like, in a lot of fandoms, not to feel some type of way about the non-canon ships because of how fans interact with it.
They're so nasty. They say the worst
really
things.
Mean.
And they like tear down the characters in the ship that you do like. They usually will tear down, like, especially if it's a female character that they want with other people, they'll start like attacking the female characters, like character and like mm-hmm. the actor. And like, there's so much stuff about it that I think harbors like bad feelings.
And there's a whole other layer when it's a like hetero ship and the non-canon ship is a queer ship, because then you get so many nicknames and labels thrown around, you know, if you don't ship these two characters, you're XYZ. And yep. You know, obviously you have your bad apples in the bunch that will behave that way towards fans, but like the majority is like, we're all just trying to, you know, be out here making our characters kiss, you know, we want to see exactly. It and yeah, so I know I totally feel that it can be kind of like that feeling of resentment or whatever towards a ship that's, you know, not the canon one. I totally get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think I don't know that I would hope that I never delved too deep into toxicity when it came to interacting with people, like actually interacting with them, but I definitely am the same. I obviously have started with my crack ships, apparently.
Yeah.
But I've not
honestly
stuck with
them. I envy the fact that you started with crack ships, because I think that gives people more freedom to play with their little action figures in a way that like I still find myself being like, and then like, wait, no, that's fine. It's fine. It's fiction. Like, this has no bearing on anything.
I do the same. I am sometimes the same way. So I'm a bit like, we were talking about fanfic earlier. I read a lot of like X-reader fics, mm-hmm. but if it's a ship that I really like, I can't read like an X-reader with whatever character if they're a part of that ship.
Yeah, like, I can't read like X-Silo. I can't do it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to read your reader. Where's Ray? You would never be doing this without Ray.
Exactly. No, yeah. Because I last year I spent, you know, so much time in the Last of Us fandom, which, you know, you have Joel and Tess, but that was, it's not really
short-lived.
It's short-lived ship. So, like, I could read, like, the Joel Miller X-Readers, but then I was also really into The Walking Dead, and I was like, okay, let me read Rick Grimes X-Reader. But I ship Rick Michonne so hard, I just was like, I can't, this is not for me. I'm a Daryl girly anyway, or a Negan girly.
Yes, Negan, yes.
We're Negan girlies, yes. But, like, yeah, I don't know, there's something about it where I'm like, no, like, I can't.
It feels like cheating, which I know feels
so
wrong.
Yeah. No, it's true though. Like I could never. I don't read like YA fan fiction generally anyway. It's just not really my thing, but like I have to. I could never read like I will never read Kylux fan fiction because I don't want to read Kylux fan fiction. When I was in college, my roommate loved Kylux so much would bring it up all the time just to annoy me. But then we sat and watched the Lego Holiday Special together when it came out. And there's that scene when like Hux catches Kylo shirtless. And I screamed so loud. I do not know how we didn't get a noise complaint. I was because my roommate was like stoked. And I was like, no hate to Kylux shippers, like, you know, like I you have your thing, I have mine is canon, but it's fine.
Mine is canon, and both of our ships, one half of them's dead. Well, Kylux is two halves dead.
Yeah.
But
I did want to talk about that like specifically a little bit, because I think we've all had our fair dose of Raylo interactions on the internet, and I just like I would love to have a brief discussion about why it's, you know, because you like you said, Maggie, like so many spuffy shippers entered the Raylo territory, and like enemies to lovers is a timeless trope, and there have been so many,
and yet we all get bashed every single time, and it's the same discourse every single time, and I'm like, I constantly tell myself like, don't do this to yourself again, and then I do it to myself again, and I see the same exact discourse, and I get the same exact, I'm pissed off the same way again, and I'm just like,
do we have any theories as to why Raylo out of everything else? Because, you know, then we also have in the same category, well, not in the same category, because Anakin and Padme were not the enemies to lovers trope, but we have similar negative interactions between those two characters in canon, and the response is not the same. And I just want to know, what is it about Raylo? What was the shift in fandom that caused Raylo to be? Because I don't know if this has been your experience, but every person I have ever met that is like 35 or younger has an opinion on Raylo, even if they've never seen Star Wars.
Yeah, wow. It is. So I have a theory specifically. I don't know about, well, I do know about that. so I have a really strong theory about this. So I do think that the fundamental reason why Raylo had such a strong reaction in The Force Awakens is because of the expanded universe. I am somebody who read the Star Wars books starting from a really young age. That is, I have a whole, my entire thing. I have like Jada action figures. I like, that was my jizz. And exactly, I've been looking at your shirt the entire time. So I think people went into that movie not fully knowing that they were eradicating the canon that so many people were really familiar with, because you have to remember like 2014, 2015 was still a very different place on the internet. Normies, even if you really were engaged in a fandom, you weren't actively seeking out news about it. So a lot of people went into The Force Awakens thinking that they were going to do a reveal that Rey was like a long lost child of Han and Leia, and that Kylo was her brother, and that they're going to do like a Jason Jaina situation, or like even an Anakin Jaina thing. Like they were going to do something there with the kids, with the twins, or with the siblings. And so I think a lot of people went into that movie thinking that they were going to be siblings. And since we obviously did not have any answers to that after The Force Awakens, there was still obviously a potential for that to be a thread that they could pull on. I think there was a lot of people that thought it was incest. And then there were a lot of people that assumed maybe they're cousins. Maybe, you know, they're related some other way. And so there were, and that was very early days. I've been here since the very beginning, since the first fics were added to AO3. And everybody would always have to be like, they're not cousins. Even like my first Raylo fic, I'm like, I don't believe they're cousins. So I think it was the fact that a lot of people assumed that they were related. I also think that that was the coming of age for a lot of people who weren't necessarily raised on ships like Spuffy, mm-hmm. that weren't super invested in things like Captain Swan or Dramione or Damon and Elena. Like, there's so many ships that were really fundamental for a lot of us who then like became Raylo shippers, that I think that that was a turning point for a lot of people, and they didn't know how to handle the big feelings that enemies to lovers made them feel, compounded by the fact that Tumblr was at its absolute most toxic at that point. That was the point where I was starting to leave the Once Upon a Time fandom, slowly removing myself because it was so toxic. And I saw Raylo as my exit strategy, because so many people who shipped Captain Swan, an enemies to lovers ship where both characters tried to kill each other at least once, were saying that they would block people if they found out you were shipping Raylo. And it became this thing where people were, who were even Spuffy shippers, were saying things like, if you ship Raylo, I'm blocking you. Like, I'm going to like put you on blast. It was a whole thing. And I think it was the incest thing. Obviously, like we talked about Game of Thrones, people were still really weird about that. And that was like the same contemporary time period. And so I think that it was like a compounding of a lot of weird emotions. And then you also had a political landscape going on at the backdrop of all of this, where we were seeing divisiveness and like really bad feelings towards your fellow man in a way that we hadn't necessarily seen on that level before. And social media was taking off. We had more social media platforms than ever before. Everybody was getting on them. Everybody was being exposed to everybody's opinions at all the same time. So I genuinely think that Raylo was just bad timing. I think that had it come out in like 2009, nobody would have said a word. Everybody would have been on board. Even 2011, if it had come out in 2011, I think people would have been on board. But I saw so much hypocrisy, because there were people who hated Captain Swan, hated the ship. I got death threats for shipping Captain Swan because it was an enemies to lovers ship. And they all started shipping Raylo. And so I think it was genuinely just like terrible timing. That's my theory. That's the theory I've held on to for almost 10 years now.
Oh my God.
Terrible timing. And it is so funny that you say that, like, everybody does have an opinion. And I constantly still find myself telling people, like, I'm not that kind of Raylo. Because mm-hmm. we can't also ignore the fact that there were a lot of racist people who were extremely negative about even the mere concept of Finn and Rey. And so I think that a lot of people were seeing that too. Those bad apples were coming to the surface. People were seeing those opinions and just immediately equating that if you're shipping these two together. And I'm seeing some of that same discourse floating to the surface with the Ghoul and Lucy and Max. And I'm seeing the same thing happen again. And I'm like, no, I did it to myself again.
Well, I've seen it. Yeah. That, I mean, you bring up that. That's a good point, because I have definitely seen the Raylos. All Raylos except for Brooke getting on the cool seat train. I've seen that in the Raylo. I've seen a lot of, like, you know, I have seen, like, I feel like for years I was in this bubble where I was like, the Raylos aren't toxic. What are you talking about? It's the antis that are toxic. They're the ones sending death threats. And I hadn't actually seen that side of Raylo until I got on and started to become more popular on Twitter.
Yep.
And then I started to see some... I had all the Raylos turn against me a few months ago for saying that I thought it was okay if Ben is not in the Ray movie. Like, that's... It's fine. Like, am I sad? Yes. Do I want that to happen? No. But... I honestly believe that there is a like group of Raylos that just like Ben, they do not care about Ray.
Oh yeah, 100%. I have a whole block list of them. I've dealt with them for years. I'm blocked. They block me. There's a whole group that they, and I hate to say this, because I hate that shipping is always reduced to this idea that, oh, you're just imagining yourself as the female character to get with this guy. No, that's not it. If I want that, I'll read a reader insert fic. Mm. But there are people that I think have a really hard time separating that, especially really hard time separating Adam Driver from Ben Solo, that I think crosses a lot of lines. But that's the same thing in every fandom. For some reason, Raylo just gets like horrendously like bullied for it. Because like if either of you were in the Pedro Pascal fandom at the start of 2020, when everybody was watching Narcos during the pandemic, I can tell you the things slip, people go cray cray.
Yeah.
And it happens with every fandom, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. I think it's just so weird that, like, you know, I also feel like there was a time in my fandom life where people did not know what shipping is, but now everybody knows what shipping is because
everybody on TikTok knows. And I don't think some of those people need to know about it.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just it's interesting. It's definitely shaped the way I engage with people on the internet. Because
yep,
whew.
Yeah, I'm definitely a lot quieter about my ships.
I ebb and flow.
Yeah, yeah. If it's like a universally enjoyed ship, I'll talk about it more. But if it's, I don't know, it's just there were like, I'm trying to remember, like when Loki came out and I started posting some like Sylvie Loki, Silky content on TikTok.
I love Silky so much. I will not be silenced.
Yeah, but like, I guess just at the time when the show had come out and it was just people were throwing words around that didn't mean anything. And it's like, self-cest is not a thing. It's made up. It's fake.
It's the
not incest.
It's the politicalization and it's like turning shipping into advocacy and like the politicization of it, which has been like the downfall of modern shipping.
Yeah.
Like I ship things because I want them to kiss. I don't care about the moral.
Will say this until the day I die. Like there's been plenty of think pieces and conversations about how like everyone's hot, but no one's horny. If two actors or two characters are hot and actually have chemistry with each other, I don't care. I want them to kiss.
Exactly.
You know? Because
like it's just that simple.
Especially in the MCU, it's so hard to find two actors that have like palpable chemistry that make me want to care about the relationship.
Yeah.
And for me, it was Sylvie and Loki was like the only ship in the MCU that I have ever given a shit about. And then, you know, it is that people are politicizing it, making it, oh, it's incest, it's self-cest. They were somehow equating, you know, the very real criticisms that people had about Loki's gender fluidity not being explored as much as people had hoped it would in the show. But then, like, somehow turning that again, being something against the ship. Which I feel are two things that are completely opposite. Obviously, like, you can have a conversation about how, you know, there's one line in the show about how Loki is bisexual and then he's in, like, a hetero relationship. But then we get into the whole, like, bi erasure and whatever. Like, it's a whole big conversation. But just, like, shipping the two characters, just leave me alone. Pick it up with God.
It's not hurting anybody.
Right.
You know, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and also that, taking that, and all of that was directed towards Sylvie, but not Loki. Like, oh, Loki's my sweet baby Pookie Bear, and he's never done anything wrong, and we're going to hate this new actress, ooh, that was her big break. Like, oh, we hate Sylvie, we hate Sophia DiMartino.
Come up with fake tweets about Sophia, and, like, paint her in, like, all of the worst way. Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation to go into about certain shipping dynamics that I steer very, very far away from because they get so, so woman hating. And it scares me. But it is funny that you talked about the MCU because like my current hyperfixation is from a Marvel property because we finally got romance in Marvel and I was living for it. And of course I had to go and like ship the two characters that everybody wants everybody who ships them to die. I've had to block friends over it. And it's been so funny too. Cause like I grew up shipping Remy and Rogue. I loved Rami like 25 plus years. I've shipped that ship, but I always loved Magneto and Rogue in the comics because they had like four different runs where like they were together. There's alternate universes where they're like married and have a kid. And like, it's so good because like one, I love age gaps. And two, I love like the enemies to lovers dynamic of it. And the fact that like she makes him happy and he's like such a grump. And like, I just love that dynamic. And so like getting that in a current Marvel property that's on screen and they're kissing, they're dancing, they've got like a song, there's like angst, there's a love triangle, like there's fake out deaths, there's like tragedy, there's like joining sides. It was like a lion's share of things that I've just been like dying for in Marvel. And then like in the background you also have like the Logan Jean Scott love triangle, and then you have like Morph's pining and the way that like they love Logan so much that they'll turn into Jean. Like there's so much in that, in this show, that has been like long overdue in the MCU.
I think that's why I'm like, I love Daredevil and yes! that all of the Netflix Marvel shows so much. Frank, Karen, forever.
Castle.
Please. Daredevil, Born Again.
That's another one that
give it to me.
Is both like a procedural vibe and also enemies to lovers, like kind of together, because like there's moments where they think they're on other opposite sides of this thing, and I just
it's the good shit. But they also just like the characters have so much chemistry between I will take Karen and Frank in that elevator over any MCU kiss probably ever.
Yeah, I was gonna say that scene is worth more kisses than every good ship has a elevator scene. Raylo can also attest to this.
You're so right.
And I think that's another really entertaining thing about shipping, especially in on-screen media. There are certain shorthands that have been so ingrained in shipping that you always kind of know where a relationship is going, because they replicate things that we've already seen in similar dynamics in similar shows or in very different shows. And I think that's one of the reasons why I joked earlier that like I've been blessed to always have canon ships. And I think it's because I gravitate towards the same type of dynamics that then replicate similar vibes every time. So I know very early on, like, obviously these two characters are going to end up together. Like, I always laugh that there were people that hated Captain Swan, that hated the scene where Killian basically says like, you're dried up, dead and useless, but like not to me. And then we basically got that same line with Raylo. And I remember sitting and watching The Last Jedi, like when we got that scene, and I was like, oh my God, it's Captain Swan again. And then seeing the people who hated Captain Swan and specifically that scene, then loving that scene in Raylo, just made my brain hurt, because I'm like, it's the same scene, it's the same conversation. It's just like, and you see that even like going back to like fiction and stuff, like there's stuff in like Wuthering Heights and Pride and Prejudice and like all of these novels that have then become kind of baked into dynamics and things. And I think also saying that like I grew up loving Kathy and Heathcliff and Wuthering Heights also says a lot about my shipping dynamics. I like them toxic. I want you to crawl into my grave when I die.
That's okay. So speaking of replication and pattern recognition and seeing things repeat themselves, that was like the number one thing I saw when Fallout came out was it was Rey, Finn, and Kylo.
Yeah, and I was even like, had Poe and Dane have the same kind of situation with, I also want to like ship Max with Dane. So
that's it's a very similar I guess because also the characters have similar looks to each other, minus the ghoul and Kylo Ren, but like still kind of same, not the same aesthetic, but same vibes are there.
Yeah.
So I see it. So like, I am not like an anti like ghoulsy. I want to put that out there. I'm not an anti. I could be open to the idea. I feel like I just have not seen enough.
You need to read some of the fics. I think that will convert you. I just had Ghoulsy Week last week, and the tag already has, let me see as of today, what the tag has been up to. That's my favorite hobby now with fandoms, is when I get a hint of a ship. This happened with Namor and Shuri, because I had somebody who saw a really early screening of it, and they came to me and they're like, it's Raylo, you're going to love it. And I was like, and then I went to my screening and I posted that it was Raylo, and I got so much hate, and that's fine. But it was so fun to sit back and wait for that tag to fill up, because it was the same dynamic. So Ghoulsea is up to 200 fics.
Wow. Okay.
There's a lot out there that might help tempt you in that direction.
Yeah, I think I need like more like closure with like, because Cooper is still like, where's my family, you know, like once that's like close, you know, we got closure with that, maybe I'll be more open to the, and like I obviously season two looks like it's going in the direction of them being together a lot more, like just in the general vicinity, because they're traveling together, not like together. So we'll see, you know,
we'll see if they chicken out. They might chicken out. I want to believe they won't chicken out, and like at least exploring it. Like, I don't expect it to be like end game, because I mean, he does have a sell by date technically.
But also, you know, if there was going to be a show that doesn't chicken out, it's going to be this one. Cause like, you know,
they're so freaky. There's cousin stuff.
I was so shocked when
that entire first episode, I was like,
well, I went to an early screening of the first two episodes, and I had to fly to Chicago for it and everything, and it's been so long since I've lived in Chicago that I forgot about Chicago traffic, and so we ended up being just slightly late to the premiere, and I thought, okay, it looks like we've only missed like 5 minutes, but then when the show dropped a week later or whatever and we pulled it up, we were like, okay, let's just see what we missed. We missed like 11-12 minutes of the intro, and I missed the entire, like, we got to the part where Lucy's like, oh yeah, the cousin stuff is like in the past. We missed a whole chapter.
Like, I missed a chapter.
But no, this is Fallout. This is like, I think it's like the most, certainly one of the most graphic shows I've ever seen, you know, beyond like Game of Thrones and whatever. But like, if any show is gonna explore that, it's gonna be this one. So
yeah, I feel like they need to know, at least know how that dynamic could work. Yeah. Doesn't have to be endgame. I'm fine with it not being endgame, but like, let's just play with it.
That's fair. I could see them going in that direction where it's like hinted, you know, it could work, except for this thing. So not quite forbidden, but like, you know, there's something that's in the way. I mean, and that's kind of my jam too, right? Because that's kind of like Frank Castle's whole thing.
Yeah.
Is like, my family's in the way.
Right. And that's why I was like, how does Brooke not like this? It's got the Frank Castle spice. That's so here.
Okay.
That's it's got so like fair. One ingredient. It's got like ingredients from all of your ships just like kind of jumbled up.
That's
it's
so
a,
true.
It's a slightly different dish, but it's still got the same ingredients.
That's so true. I need to know, we've talked a lot about different ships, but like, if you had to define your OTPs. You had to, you know, top three OTPs, top five, if you can narrow it down, what would you put there?
Oh my gosh. That feels like putting me on the spot, because we've talked about so many. And I feel like there's different types of ships for different occasions. Mm-hmm. Like, Dramione is my go-to whenever I need a good fan fiction that makes me feel things. Mm-hmm. I know I can always go to Dramione. Whenever I need a ship that feels like very comfortable, I'm gonna put on Bones, because I love their dynamic. It used to be Castle until Castle pissed me off, so now it's Bones. If I want a ship that makes me like angsty and like feeling a lot of bigger emotions, it's gonna be something like Raylo. I don't really read Spuffy Fix, and then I feel like here recently, it's been like Magneto and Rogue, and I think that one has quickly climbed up my list, simply because it was something I never thought I would ever see on screen, and the fact that I got it, and I have like such great moments from it that I can like really cling to and play with. I think that one's up there, and then I don't know who would be my like fifth one. I'm looking at like my, well, I would say Jen and Cassian. Because I do love me some Rebel Captain. Also,
yeah, but they're co-workers.
And they're co-workers. And they're also at odds with each other. So it's not enemies to lovers, but there's like the vibes of like, I will kill you if you screw this up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not afraid to murder you. Cassian is that man. So I do think I'd probably slot them in there, but that is probably in the spot that would like come and go depending on like what I need. Yeah.
That's fair. Sawyer?
Oh, me? Okay. I definitely am in the space where like I can only have so much room for ships. So I mean, at the end of the day, it's always gonna be Raylo. Like that's just gonna be number one. It's the one that's stuck with me the longest. Silky left a really profound impact on me in a way that I wasn't expecting from the MCU. Especially because of the bi representation and like having such a like a weird relationship with myself and my identity as a bisexual woman and having not, you know, having regrets that I haven't explored that as much as I maybe would have wanted to in the past, but always kind of seeing myself ending up with a man and the weird complex feelings associated with that. So Silky has always, you know, that'll always be one. And then, yeah, I mean, like, I have various others that I like, but I think if they're, like, the third one that I'm still gravitating towards is Daymira. I don't know if I'm gonna watch season two, just because, you know, and I'm not, you know, I have, like, I don't want to make a big fuss over it. Like, it does frustrate me that, because we're also seeing it in the High Republic now, like, authors, writers who don't like a certain character and are like characterizing them a certain way because of that. It makes me sad, but it's like, it doesn't make me angry. Like I can just like, I still have my AO3. I have my role play. Like I can healthily engage with what I want out of that without
really
ruining
it. Really sucks to love villains.
Yeah.
Like, as a Martian row girl to the end of the day, I'm like, he's done nothing wrong. I know you guys all disagree with me, but he's done nothing wrong. So I'm just going to like skip past these pages.
I don't know if that's one I can get behind, but I support you.
I love me a man in a mask. What can I say? Real. I say this as I have Kylo Ren here. I've got Zemo here.
It's so funny though, because I cannot do Anakin and Padme. I can't do it. Like, and that's because Anakin, like, for personal reasons, that's a really triggering ship for me, which I completely understand. If a ship is triggering for somebody, that's cool. No explanation needed. Like, that should just be an A-okay thing. But it's also not cool to, like, go into someone's DMs and be like, this ship triggers me. Why do you ship it? Like,
right?
It's like, okay.
Mute, block, scroll.
Yeah, I think we can transition into our rapid fire section, which is kind of for TikTok, but also kind of sort of, you know, it depends on how I'm feeling when I edit this later. But we like to ask our guests a variety of some random, some pointed questions that
some like catered
to answer off the top of your head. So the first one is, oh, specifically for you, what is your favorite convention you've ever attended or worked at / moderated?
So I do think that my favorite convention experience was Star Wars Celebration in London. In the press room, specifically when Diego Luna recognized me for my Andor reviews.
Oh, yeah.
And it was such a beautiful moment because I wasn't doing the interviews for that. I was actually the camerawoman for our editor-in-chief. And he graciously like said that the question he was asking to Diego was for me, Maggie. And Diego immediately was like, oh my God, Maggie. And like, it was such a beautiful moment. I captured it on camera. I don't know how I managed to keep filming while also like shaking his hand under the camera. It was a great moment. As somebody who cites like Rogue One as a film that like fundamentally changed me as a person, like that's when I started getting really invested in like politics, and like I started working on different campaigns and like fundraisers and doing all sorts of stuff. That was a movie that really galvanized me and or continued to radicalize me, and getting to like write about it and then having it be recognized by the man who plays the character that means so much to me was just like such a cool moment. And I had already met him the year previous at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim, where I did get to interview him on the press line, but that moment just specifically was so good. And I've also moderated for so many cool people, so like that's a hard one to like even say, because like I've moderated for Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, I just on my For You page on TikTok today, there was
you saw me.
I saw Jason Isaacs. With Jason Isaacs. I was like, oh my God, that's Maggie.
I know, so many people tag me in that, and I was like, oh my god, it's me. It's hi.
It's funny because like I'll see your posts where you will post like your interview clips, and then I'll see like random like from the actual page or like just random fans reposting stuff, and I'm like, oh my god, I know her.
I know, it's so cool, and it's been really fun to be on the opposite side of that, because like I remember when I started like befriending journalists and stuff when I was just a fan, like interacting with stuff, and how excited I would get, and then I realized people feel that way when they see me, and I'm just like, yeah, my brain is breaking. This is very weird. This is so fun.
All right. The next one is also specific to you. Can you name your favorite fan fiction of all time? And if you can't pick one, pick three.
Okay. So I can name one. And this is going to sound... this being for TikTok is so funny because it's going to be such a basic-ass answer. But I was there in the early days. I was there when it was updating live. I love Manacled. The Dramione fanfic that is getting turned into a novel by Sin Li Nu.
Oh my god.
I'm so excited for that. I love that. I read it when she first started publishing it. I think I got involved reading it in like maybe chapter 5 or 6. It is one of the most like gut-wrenching, horrifying, most addictive reads that I have ever read. So I would say that one off the top of my head as a fic that I remember the name of. There was also a fic that I read when I was younger. This is going to really just make me sound like a nerd. There was this fanfiction on fanfiction.net called The Phantom of the Auditorium. I don't think it exists anymore, but if by some chance the author of that is still out there and you're watching this now, I think about your fic at least once a month. It was a Phantom of the Opera modern fic. It was written in like 2005, 2006, and it was basically like Phantom of the Opera in high school. And like an auditorium, and the author would take names from the people who are reading the fic, and they would like write minor characters into the fic for the people who were like always reviewing. I remember that they wrote me into one of the chapters as like a nerdy theater kid. And I think about it all the time. So I always think of that. Was it not really well written fic? The person was probably no older than me at the time, and we were all just like having our fun. But I think about it all the time. And it's so sad that I cannot find it because fanfic.net is a trash site these days. But that's a fic that, like, I'll be, like, driving somewhere and I'll be like, oh, remember the Phantom of the Auditorium? Yeah. I'm trying to think of a third one. Obviously, like, there's so many Raylo fics that I love that are now books. Like, Love Hypothesis, mm-hmm. I love that one so much when it was a regular fic. And there's a couple other ones, like Jin Soto's stuff is so good. And I remember reading all of that when it was just fanfics on AO3 that I was getting through after The Last Jedi. So I'll just put Raylo as, like, my favorite fics. All the published Raylos out there.
Shout out to... See, Raylos just keep winning, honestly.
We can only win.
Yeah, I didn't I can't remember what the actual book is called, but I think the fan fiction was called Landscape of a Blur of Conquerors or something like that.
Thea's book, yeah.
That is my best friend's like favorite fan fiction of all time, and she was just gut-wrenched when it was turned into, she was happy. She was like excited that it would turn into a book, but that meant the fan fiction had to come down, and she was like, this was the best fan fiction I have ever read in my entire life. So I never got a chance to read it that way, but
it was a really good one. That was another one that I remember reading when it was like the first couple of chapters. It's so good.
There are so many fics that I've like downloaded the PDF version of because I'm like, what happens if this goes away? Because I got a Kindle for Christmas, and you can send PDFs to your Kindle. So if you are on AO3, you can download a fic as a PDF and send it to your Kindle to read, which is game changer, honestly.
Absolute game changer.
All right. Brooke, do you want to do the next two since I did the...
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Do you have a favorite Marvel villain?
Oh my god.
Just wondering.
I do. His name is Zemo.
Oh, yeah. The one and only helmet Zemo?
The one and only. He may or may not be like up here on my shelf in various forms. I may or may not have a shrine over here to Zemo.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel like we somehow like in a roundabout way became mutuals through Zemo.
We did.
which is
great. And then we're not far from each other geographically. I remember that.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. And then just we always, you know, if we've got a Star Wars girly on, I would love to know your favorite Star Wars characters.
So my favorite Star Wars characters are Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, Cassian Andor, Anakin Skywalker, but specifically Darth Vader. Big Darth Vader girly. Love me some Darth Vader. My favorite character meet at Disney World was meeting Darth Vader. And then, gosh, I guess Qui-Gon Jinn. I'm still like emotionally traumatized by Qui-Gon Jinn's death. So I'll say Qui-Gon Jinn. I just realized I named like all the male characters. I do love female characters. I promise you. Jen Erso is a character that I identify with a lot. I always joke that Star Wars, I have never failed to see myself in Star Wars. There's always a white brunette lead. So I'm really excited for like new shows like Acolyte and Andor and all these things where other people are getting to see themselves in Star Wars at the helm. So like I always gravitated towards Padme, Jen, Rey. I'm very basic. What can I say?
Basic's okay. We love it. Okay, and then to wrap up, we always like to finish out with a question from Twitter or Instagram or TikTok or wherever. So this question I thought would be good for this episode from Steward of Ostagar, I think is how you say that on Twitter, asks, what do you believe is the most important narrative in writing or creating a strong female character? Kind of a loaded question, but
it is a very loaded question. And I think my answer is rooted in my frustration with characters who are labeled as strong female characters in modern media, because I think the strongest thing that anyone can do is to allow themselves to be loved. And I think that romance and love is sorely lacking in all of these strong female lead narratives that we're seeing in media today. And I think that it is really important that even if they do allow themselves to be loved, that it is love that is allowed to continue without death. Because I find that even when you do allow them to have this like spark of love, this moment of joy, it is always followed up with absolute tragedy. And I don't think that's always necessary in fiction. I'm not against killing off characters if it suits the narrative and it works for like where things are going. But if it's just like shock value or it's not fundamentally pushing a character forward, it's not necessary. But I do believe that the thing that is most important in narrative is love. I think that that's what's missing. And I could get into a tangent about why I think that's missing, but I think it's more than just like reactionaries online, but I think it is an inherent push towards insular individualism that we have seen in culture as a whole, where people are very afraid of community and they're very afraid of attachments, and it's being then mirrored onto the things that we're consuming. And I think it's a really terrifying concept. And so I think that you can't really have a strong female character if you don't have the connections that are like so vital to making you who you are and like building you and shaping you. Because I don't think I'm a strong woman in the world without the people I love and care about. So it should be in media too.
Yeah, I like that. Please.
I don't think we need an answer.
I've thought about this a lot. This is like a topic that like keeps me up in the middle of the night.
No, my first thought was like having some, and it's not, I don't think it's necessary, but I think it's really important with the representation of female characters that we've gotten just in history, is having like that female character still have some sense of like femininity. Mm-hmm. Because so much of what we think of, oh, a strong female character, when we think of examples, it's like, oh, what makes them a strong female character? And it is like their lack of femininity, or that they're rejecting this femininity and they're adopting more of these masculine personality traits or characteristics, or how they are more written like how a male character is written, and that's what makes them, you know, a strong female character. So I think it all goes into with like the ability to love, not even just, you know, romantic relationships, but, and we also, because when we think of, I guess the feminine characters that are more of like mother figures, we don't necessarily always think of them as being like the strong female character. Mm-hmm. And I like that, at least in more recent times, that has been a little bit subverted with characters, and we have, especially in Star Wars, I feel like we've gotten a lot more of that. Like, I think of Hera being a strong female character, but still being this motherly feminine person that has the capability to like love some people, like someone else, so deeply. And that's, I love Hera so much for that. And I think, you know, this is a whole other conversation, but I think a lot of the hate that Rey gets is that she still is a very, she's so compassionate, and she keeps that femininity about her, those very feminine traits that we don't normally see. Even with, you know, you have Leia and Padme as characters who their costumes are more on the feminine side, but a lot of their behavior is not as, I don't know how to say it, like it just feels less like feminine in a way, if that makes sense.
That definitely makes sense, yeah.
In a way that I think Rey shows more of that throughout, like just how she treats other people and other, because we, yeah, because like Padme is a feminine, I would say is a feminine character and a strong character. But, and I think a lot of it is ultimately how much of her character was erased in Revenge of the Sith, that erases a lot of that, those parts of her that we, I wish that we would see, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No notes. I mean, I would say along the same thing as both of you. I tend to point to Rey as a very great example of a strong feminine character, because physical strength is certainly possible for women. However, it looks different. And I think that a lot of male audiences, they only attribute strength to like physical strength. And I really don't like when they, you know, usually it is not a well thought out or educated argument that they make about Rey being a Mary Sue, but I really do not like the argument that she doesn't go through anything, because a lot of what she goes through is her internal struggle with her identity, which is something that all women go through, in a, because that's kind of what society pushes onto us. We have to know who we are, and we have to also be 500 different types of person for everybody else in our life. So yeah, I think a strong female character is one that goes through emotional vulnerability and also is able to juggle her physical challenges with her emotional challenges. And so, you know, just to tie all of the things we've said in a neat little bundle. But thank you, Stu, for the question. Stu is one of my moderators in my Discord community, so we love him. He's great. But yeah, all right. That's our show, guys. Like, we made it.
We did. Yeah. It was awesome.
Maggie, was, thank you so much. It was a lot of yapping. This is our longest episode, I think, so far. I'm so sorry. Well, no, we love it. We love it. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us. And we'd love to have you again in any capacity. We would love, before we wrap up, if you could tell us where the good people can find you, and if you have any cool things that you're working on that you want to share.
Yes. So you can follow me on Twitter at Maggie of the Town. And then I am the Maggie Lovett over on Instagram. Those are my two public facing profiles that you are free and welcome to follow me on, as well as on TikTok, which I don't really use. And I actually can't remember what my username is, but it's something to the effects of like Maggie Lovett. There's only like three of us out there, and I will find the rest of them, and I will be the only one. There can be only one. So I do have some fun stuff that has come out recently. If this is going to air in July, I'm trying to think of like what's relevant. I will have done a couple of conventions by then, so I think we'll have more on the horizon around about July. But at the present, if you want to like go back and look at what I was doing at the beginning of June, I just dropped a really cool interview with Matthew Watterson, who voiced Magneto. It was a 30-minute conversation. It's a video and written up, so you can read that. And I'll have my second interview with Daniel Brühl will be up for Karl Lagerfeld early June, so you can check that out. Really fun that I've gotten to speak to my hyperfixation twice. So, but I don't know what I'll be doing in the beginning of July. Hopefully I'll have like a whole gaggle of Acolyte reviews for you to read and lots of fun stuff.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much. This was a fantastic conversation. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it.
And we'll yap with you soon. Goodbye.